roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on a Monday. We are excited to talk to you for the next hour, like we do every Monday and Thursday here on Sportscaster. Got a lot to talk about because three title fights took place this past Saturday night in Las Vegas, the UFC Apex to be exact. We will go over the whole card and all the results from all 15 fights that held up. That's right. We told you on Thursday, is it really going to be 15? Are they going to chop it down? Nope. Everyone stayed healthy. That's great news. And everyone came out and competed. Almost, I think we went over 8 hours because we started at 2:15. I remember tweeting something at 10:15 p.m. that Anik and the boys were logging overtime. I think this may have been the longest card ever, but seriously, it was a fun night, and we're going to unpack the whole card, including all three title fights. We had a champion who defended versus another champion. We had the women's MMA, the GOAT, they call her, defend one of her two titles. She's a champ. And then we had one of the champions lose his title. Highly controversial, but by the letter of the law, everything was done right. So we'll go over all that. We'll go over the card and, of course, all the latest news, including a lot of trash talk attached to that last fight that I just mentioned. So buckle up, Junkie Nation. We're going to be with you for the next hour. And we're also going to talk to Eric Nixick, who was in the corner of Aljamain Sterling on Saturday night. So, 15 fights took place on Saturday night, including three title fights. We'll start at the main card. We'll work our way down. I don't want to leave anyone out of the 30 fighters. Let me see if I can blitz through all of it real quick, and then we'll start getting Goz's takes on the main fights from Saturday. Jan Blachowicz defeated Israel Adesanya, hanging on to his UFC light heavyweight title. Amanda Nunes defeated Megan Anderson. She held on to her UFC featherweight title. Aljamain Sterling defeated Peter Yan via disqualification. He took a knee as a grounded opponent from Peter Yan, and it was intentional, but ruled by the referee. Islam Makhachev defeated Drew Dober. Alexander Rakic defeated Thiago Santos. That was your main card on the pay-per-view. Moving on to the prelims on ESPN and ESPN Deuce, Dominic Cruz defeated Casey Kenney. Kyler Phillips defeated Song Yadong. Askar Askarov defeated Joseph Benavidez. Kaikara France defeated Rogerio Bondarin. On the early prelims on ESPN Plus, Tim Elliott defeated Jordan Espinoza. Kennedy and Chukwu defeated Carlos Olberg. His name's the one I butchered. Although Chukwu probably has a problem with the way I pronounce his name too. Sean Brady defeated Jake Matthews. Amanda Limos defeated Livia Hanata Souza. Uros Medic defeated Alon Cruz, and Trevin Jones defeated Mario Bautista. The following fighters received $50,000 bonuses. And Chukwu and Carlos Olberg shared $100,000, so they got $50 each for fight of the night. Performances of the night went to Kaikara France and Uros Medic. There you have it. There's the fight card from Saturday. Goes 30 fighters, 15 fights. 8 hours of fighting, three title fights, judging controversies, fight controversies, questionable ref stoppages, fighters stayed undefeated, some took their first loss. Pretty historical all the way around.
You know what it felt like? It felt like a WrestleMania back in the day. A WrestleMania would unfold over so many hours, and at the end they would always, granted, they're the ones that make it up, but there was always some kind of controversy or always something crazy to talk about on Monday. They made sure of that. But in this particular fight card, it kind of had everything. If you look at the weight classes that were showcased, they were all over the place. And then the three title fights, we don't get to see that too often. And one of them, well, actually two of them had a little bit of controversy, but one of them really just left us yanking our hair out, especially if you're gambling.
Yeah, for sure. And so with Eric Nixick joining us soon, are we still on for 9:40 a.m. Pacific, 12:40 p.m. Eastern?
I haven't heard back, so I think it's just the regular time.
Let's start off with that, and then we can circle back, you know, and button up that whole topic, and then we'll get to the other title fights. So Peter Yan was the incumbent, the undisputed bantamweight champ going into this fight, and he was up on all three judges' scorecards, 29-28. Now, they arrived different ways in getting there. Go ahead.
You want to talk to Ray Longo?
Sure.
All right. He literally just texts me right now. All right. I'll book him here in a little bit.
Okay, cool. What was I saying? Oh, so he was up 29-28 on all three judges' scorecards going into the fourth round. It was different the way they came to that agreement. You know, they weren't all in unison on all three rounds. But it was important to note that going into the championship rounds, Peter Yan was up. And in the fourth round, Peter Yan was on his way to winning that round as well. It wasn't the type of round that couldn't get overturned by a nice takedown with some back take and an attempt at a submission, or with a sequence of strikes in which Peter Yan maybe gets staggered or knocked down. So, you know, the fourth was still up for grabs technically, but I think if it was going to continue heading the way it was going to be Peter Yan now up 49-46 on all three judges' scorecards, or 3-1 if you want to look at it that way. I apologize. Not 49-46, 38-35, I guess it would be the score. I think I got that right. 38-36. Yeah, 38-36. So, what happened? There was a sequence in which Aljamain Sterling was a grounded opponent right in front of Peter Yan with one knee clearly down, the other one not. He had both of his hands on the ground, kind of like simultaneously, or no, that's not the right word. If I recall, there was a shift of whether it was two or one. Peter Yan had a front headlock, and a lot of fighters, what they try and do is lift you up using the headlock so that you don't have neither of your hands down, right? But depending on what the rules are in that particular state, it can be one hand or both. But the knee has always been down, a downed opponent. Since they came up with the unified rules, one knee qualifies you as down. That's the important thing to focus on. Apparently, at some point, Mark Smith told him he was a grounded opponent. And apparently, there was a conversation between Yan and his coaches where one of them told him, there's different versions, man, of what they were saying that night and then what we've been able to find out since then, where one coach told him, no, just punches, and then the other one gave him a yes. But what I'm still not clear if that yes meant yes, go ahead and throw a knee or a kick to a grounded or to the opponent at that time because he's not grounded, or yes, he was answering Peter Yan's question. You know, I don't know. That's where it's a little bit controversial there, because DC was trying to bring Khabib, who speaks Russian, into the conversation as to what Khabib told DC that night. Khabib wasn't in the corner of Peter Yan. He was there as a fan and as a cornerman to Islam Makhachev earlier. So, as this happens, unease delivered clearly to what would have been the front of the head, but by the time Aljamain turned, it was to his left temple, and it immediately knocked him down, concussed him, messed him up. I don't think there was any question to whether it was illegal. Of course it was illegal. And now it's just a matter of figuring out if it was intentional. But as we were gathering the info, Yeah, I'm going off the reaction. Whoa, what happened? Yo, whoa, we're all saying that. And as they're telling us what happened and they're telling us that Mark Smith said he's grounded, I knew then it was going to be a disqualification. What I couldn't understand was why there was a hesitancy in waving the fight off. I didn't like them putting Aljo in the position of, are you okay? Like, I'm not into saving fights for the pleasure of fans and media when it comes to head trauma like that. You could tell he was jacked up and it was an illegal blow, and that was gonna be it. I even if he said, yeah, I'm gonna tough this one out, I'm good to go, I can see, I don't see two Peter Yawns in front of me, I only see one. Even if he said all the right things, I was hoping the ref would stop it on his own. Even if the doctor said it's up to you, I was hoping the doctor would say you need to stop it. I was even hoping that if the doctor and the ref said he says he's good to continue, that the coaches wouldn't allow him to go. He just didn't look right to me, man. And that's what they finally wound up ruling, was that he was not going to continue to fight. And that was it. And Aljamain Sterling was crowned champion. He looked pretty damn surprised when they put the belt in front of around him. So I think he was thinking no contest is what it was going to be. And you could see the disappointment in his face. And then he went in the back and, you know, he was upset, obviously. What did you think of this whole thing, Goes, with what happened?
I mean, it kind of sucks because fighters put so much into their careers and this particular moment for Aljamain Sterling to win the belt that way. I mean, you could just see his own reaction of just leaving the belt there. It's just not what he was expecting. And the whole point of our sport is finding out who the baddest dude on the planet is at that weight class. And we weren't really left with that. You know, that was decided by a foul. Sometimes we're okay with judges telling us who that is, but most of the times the fighters can figure it out themselves. So to have things end that way, it just sucks. Everything that went into that, the trash talk, the work they put in, the actual fight was a very fun fight and it had its ups and downs as well. It just sucks to see it go down that way. And then you see the way people are reacting. Everybody has their own opinion on this, you know, whether they felt like he was embellishing too much or what. I'm sure that's not easy to read if you're a fighter, you know, the next day or even that night. And then you have them, the two fighters themselves, going at each other still pretty hard. So, and then you even add Triple C to the mix. He somehow makes his appearance every single time and he's got words and he takes them back. Then he goes back on them. I don't know what's going on, man, but I'm just glad that in this particular sport, this is something that we can just kind of hit the reset button and do this all over again. And boy, I'll tell you what, I was entertained by the first fight. But I don't see the second fight being that much different.
You up for them running it back?
Yeah.
And I keep seeing ASAP. I'm not that as interested in ASAP. Let the guy have a week to just maybe go through all his medicals, relax a bit, let him process it. And then, according to how he starts feeling, maybe in 30 days or so, whenever it is he's clear to do something. I don't know about, you know, light sparring, any sparring, no sparring, 30 days, 90 days, whatever it is they tell him. Then I think we can worry about that. I wouldn't want them to hang anything up on a calendar. I wouldn't even want them to go, yep, they're fighting in November, because I don't like the fact that the date is more important than his health. You know, I'd rather them hear, guess what? Remember 90 days ago when that fight happened? Yeah, well, they're fighting in September. Well, I would rather wait to find out he's okay and then find out he's fighting sooner than to know today that I can count on that fight in November. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's a very good message to send out, not just to your fighter, but everybody else on the roster.
Everyone, yeah. Probably. We care about you guys. You know, like, we got this. We can throw shows on and we can do, you know, we can do things here at the UFC. We're not going to just throw you guys out like it's the Roman Coliseum. They're not cheering. Send out the Lions, you know, or anything
what I like do, that. What I do like about them going out and saying this is what we want to do is it helps guys like Corey Sandhagen, right?
Yeah.
Basically is on the on-deck circle. He's got next. This could have been the worst case scenario for him. So at least it kind of gives him a direction of what he's probably going to have to go through in the next couple months. Because I don't know what happens here. I mean, like, if they rematch and Peter Yan wins that fight, now they're 1-1. Do you do the third fight? Do people not really look at it as a 1-1? Do they just look at this as being like a replay? That's kind of what I wanted to ask Eric or Ray, how that feeling is on this fight.
Well, we'll know then, you know, if Peter Yan wins. If Aljamain wins, then Peter Yan might be in a tough spot, but he might be able to say, you know, I was winning the first fight before the disqualification. So it would kind of give a trilogy feel to it if number two is a classic. But I guess we got to get to number two first. Right now, you know, we're barely done here with this fight card. All right, we'll be right back, folks. It's going to be Ray Longo, who was in the corner of Aljamain Sterling this past Saturday night. Be right back. Coach Ray Longo, how you doing, my man?
Could be better, but, you know, weird circumstances, I guess. I don't know. Unemotional.
You know, I'm glad that we're talking 36 hours later, because I imagine that night you probably were going through a lot of emotions. You were probably angry. You were probably concerned, you know, for your athlete. So I imagine a lot was running through you as all this unfolded. But now that you've had some time, I guess, to process it all, what are you feeling now? You know, your guy is the champ. It was properly handled in terms of it being ruled an illegal strike, an intentional strike, and them awarding him the title, and that's that. You know, there was nothing to do with whether it was intentional or not, no contest, none of that, you know. But obviously Aljo was left with the feeling of, man, that's not how I wanted to win it. How did all this play out in your mind that night, first of all?
Well, I did like an all-nighter, so I actually just got up like an hour ago. I mean, it's just the worst, I don't know, just a horrible, I had like a 7 o'clock flight, so I never even went to bed. So it was, it's like, my sleep is my, you know, I need that sleep, so I'm probably still out of it. Yeah, just weird, man. I mean, my thing as a coach, I mean, I'll keep everything short. Let's just run it back as quick as possible. Just as long as Aljo's okay. Like people that think this kid was faking it, they're mentally deficient in a lot of areas, because I left him, he was thrown up at the house, and then by the time I left, he went to bed. But, you know, I guess they cleared him on the CAT scan. He came back from the hospital, but that was a vicious shot. It was blatant. Why that guy would have did it, being the champion, you know, it's not even a valid excuse. Do I know the rules or I don't know the rules? There was no hands involved. The guy was just a grounded opponent. Mark Smith said he was grounded, told everybody. To me, it was, you'd have to really talk to Yan and find out why, what would compel him to do that. It wasn't the heat of the moment either, because there had to be 10 Mississippis while he had his hands on his head, and then he decided to launch his head into outer space with his knee. So, you know, it's kind of sad. You know, I hope Aljo's all right. I don't know why the guy would do that. Like, it's sometimes in the heat of the battle, I understand that completely, but this was execution style.
It sure was. And the way it was handled in the octagon, you know, a lot of people were brought in. Well, the doctor was brought in, actually, you know, to assess. With it being intentional at all, and Mark was quick to, you know, point that out, that it was intentional. He did say he was grounded. Do you think we should have even gotten to the point of the doctor? You think it could have just been waved off and that was it? I mean, the kid didn't look good. You know what I mean? Even if he had a rocky moment and said, I'm going to continue, I wouldn't have wanted to see that.
Waved off immediately, yeah. But I still think, look, you have to go through certain protocols. I think Mark Smith, I'll tell you one thing. Mark Smith did a great job on this. And beyond doing a great job as a referee, I want to give the guy credit, because he did a great job as being a human being. I mean, he really came to the back. He had compassion. He really wanted to make sure Aljo was okay. That's all you can ask for a person, you know. And I what I saw from Mark Smith, he's a real good man. That's what I've seen, how he handled it even after in the back. You know, it wasn't just about the fight's over and I'll go on to my next fight. This guy was concerned about Aljo, and he showed it, and I appreciate that, and I think the guy's an outstanding human being.
Thank you for sharing that. That's very cool to say, for you to say on behalf of him, because we've seen this guy all the way from when he was reffing on the amateur scene to now the big leagues. So that was really, really cool to see his progression, and for you to tell us that, that's awesome.
Because that's the first time I met him. I don't think I've ever met him before. That's the first time. So,
mm-hmm. Do you have a personal rule, coach, in terms of, you know, there's this whole, like you said, the CAT scan's clear or it's not or whatever, all that medical talk. 30-day, 60-day, 90. Do you have a personal rule that says, nah, man, this is my rule, and we're not doing anything until, and then you apply it to what you saw on fight night?
No, I'm pretty good with whatever the medical community says. I'm sure they're going to have to do another CAT scan and clear them. Look, I've seen a million guys get concussed, right? So, you know, normally they're all right, but you don't want those things mounting up, you know, with all the, you know, CTE problems in football and boxing and all of that stuff. This shit is, you know, it's your health, and you have to take it serious. So I think everybody's gotten better with concussion protocol, and I'm sure Aljo's going to follow that to the T, and I'm assuming he's going to be okay for sure.
You were just talking about as whatever the medical field says, you're usually good with that. But you were talking about CTE. You've seen it in other sports affect the athletes.
Yeah, right. And I've seen guys get concussions, and I don't know. Yeah, but look, it's obviously a violent sport like they all are, but I'm good with the way they're going to handle it. I think they're doing a better job with it, you know. I mean, look, I come from a time when you got knocked out in the gym, you were sparring the next day. You know what I mean? So we've come a long way. I like the direction you know, it's heading. I think you know, they do try to protect the athlete, and that's all you can hope for, you know. So I just hope Aljo's okay.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I started to hear, let's run it back ASAP. I'm like, come on, guys, let's hit the brakes. Let's let the guy, like.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just saying ASAP, given everything.
No, you didn't say it. No, I'm not saying that you said it. I mean, it's something that I read over the weekend from fans and people wanting, like, the fight ran back right away. And I'm like, no. Let's wait a bit. I want to see both of these guys at 100, and then
100%. No, that's true. But I think the point, like, to me with that is, you know, because even though, you know, Aljo won the belt, it's almost like a curse to him. I mean, guys, the amount of hatred that I'm getting is, like, insane. Like, I don't make the fucking rules. What are you yelling at me for? I mean, these guys, this is insanity. Like, again, I'm stating, I've been around for a long time. I've never experienced this ever. Like, this is pure hatred for what? I have no clue. You know, it's a fucking sport and there's rules. And if anything, I'd really love to hear from Jan what would possess him to, you know, you're winning the fight at that point. Why would you do that? Like, again, it wasn't in the heat of the battle. And it's just nuts, man. I tell you, this social media shit is out of control.
You know what, Coach? I'm glad you brought that up, because that's what I wanted to touch on. We know the medical side of this, and roughly we'll have an idea of how long it's going to take for things to get normal again. But how about emotionally? That night, that is a hell of a lot of information and emotions to take in. And like you said, it doesn't end at the end of the night. With social media and all these type of things that happen, there are a lot of things that get thrown at this poor guy. He's a young cat, Aljamain Sterling. How long do you think it's going to take emotionally to get back to a good place to start training again? Did you have a good talk with Aljamain about these type of things?
I tell you what, I mean, first off, great question. No, I didn't have a talk, because again, he was delirious. I did talk to him. He did tell me he didn't feel good, you know, before the fight. I think that's why he started gassing a little bit. Something was wrong, but I kept it really short, because he definitely was in la-la land. You know what I mean? So yeah, I didn't want to start pressing him for shit. I tried to keep it as light as possible and try to accentuate, you know, some of the good things that he did in the fight. And that was it, really. But he's going to – listen, I hope he can compartmentalize, because the shit he's getting thrown at him, if he's a sensitive cat, man, he's fucking in trouble. Like, I'm telling you, the shit I got, and I will never respond to anything. I mean this from the bottom of my heart, I couldn't care less what anybody says. But it's almost comical to me at this point. But I think I woke up the first time I woke up, I just rolled over, look at my phone. You're a piece of shit. Like, what the fuck? I go, like, don't stop. I mean, does that make you feel better? I don't even know. this stuff is really crazy. I've never once gotten on social media and
wow, that's insane. So I want to talk to you about a word that's been thrown around this morning, and I've heard two of them.
Yeah.
One is let's have a rematch, and another one is let's have a replay. In your mind, how does this feel to you? Does this feel more like a replay of just kind of like a continuation of what happened that night, or does it feel more like a rematch?
I'm not really sure how to answer that, but I'm going to say rematch because now they both know each other a little more. You know what I mean? So I don't think it's going to be a re. Well, what would be the difference? What's a replay? Just replay that night?
Yeah, I think a replay, when people say that, I think they're saying we feel like we just didn't have a definitive result of who's the better fighter that night. So they're saying, let's just replay it. Some people are saying, no, Aljamain Sterling deserved to have his hand raised because Peter Yan screwed up. He made his own grave. This is a rematch.
I have no idea. I go with a rematch. I just think what I'm saying, they got to redo, they got to rerun this. And I don't want to use the word as quick as possible. I just think for Aljo and for everybody, you got to put it, everybody needs closure, and it's got to be definitive either way so people can move on. Because I kind of think I feel like I'm left in limbo. I know Aljo's the champ. I know, you know, the rules, I guess. I didn't even know the rules before that, but it's just an empty feeling kind of for me right now. I'm sure by the end of the week, I'll have a different set of emotions. Like you guys think I had 36 hours. I just didn't have 36. I had 36 hours of being in la-la land. So I'm just getting my feet under me now. So I'm sure a week from today, I'll have a totally different set of emotions. Right now, I'm just fucking confused to a lot of things. And I wish it was, you know, more definitive. It's the first time it ever happened in history. I know Aljo didn't want to get the belt like this, and I understand exactly why. And that's why I think a rematch or a replay, whatever you want to call it, just so people get a definitive, let's just find out who's better. I mean, Yan 100% was coming on in that fight. Aljo was getting tired. So I think that's why people are pissed off. If Aljo was clearly winning that fight, and that happened, I don't think anybody give a shit. I think it would be totally different. Like he was winning and that's it. But I think the fact that Yan was coming on and Aljo, you know, looked like he was getting tired was, that's what I think is, it was like the perfect storm of, you know, this is going to be a problem either way.
Yeah, Coach, you're underestimating the ability of MMA fans on social media to be twat. Any scenario you can come up with, they would complain. They love to complain. Yeah, it sucks that they're telling you that because you're definitely one of the legendary coaches in the game. And like you said, you go out there, you back your guy, and then you show up to work. And who's next? You know what I mean? So sorry that it has to be that way. Hopefully it's not anything that ever – I don't know. Can you tell us, have you ever been threatened or anything like that? Or is it just, hey, yeah, you're up and shit and they leave it alone?
No, not that I've seen yet. I haven't been threatened.
Good.
I think the other. Now this stuff is. Look, I'm laughing half the times. I'm like, wow, this is so crazy that to me it's funny. It really is. And they're coming up with, you know, I'm an acting coach. I didn't know you gave acting lessons. I mean, it's wacky, man. It really is wacky. Don't ever feel bad for me. I swear to God, I got thick skin. But I feel bad for Aljo, man, because it's the confusion of now you have the belt, but everybody's screaming at you. I just hope he can compartmentalize and, like you say, move on and let's just move on to the next fight.
Last question. This was, I think, a first full camp where Aljo also did some time at Extreme Couture. So Eric Nixick was also part of the team. How did that go? You know, did you guys have some pretty good cohesion? And
Aljo looked great before the fight. He said he didn't feel good by the time he got in there, but he looked good. You know, Nick Sick's a great guy. You know, I thought everything was done. There's no problems on that end at all. You know, I think he spent like 3 weeks there, the first three or four with me here, and then I went out the last week, and everything looked great. So that's it. I mean, I don't know. Let's rerun it back and see what happens.
Yeah. Coach, thanks a lot for your time as always. And folks, you can always catch Coach Ray Longo doing the Longo Minute over with Anik and Florian as well. Coach, thanks, man, for being here, you know, and just kind of giving us behind the scenes. Your guy got his hand raised. He's a proper champion, and we'll let them sort it out in the rematch.
Yeah, just, you know, like, again, I'd rather be in a I should be happy. I don't know. That's the confusion to me. I'm sure in a couple of days it'll be different, but I got to sort this out in my head. But unfortunate that had to happen. But, you know, Aljo, I'm going to focus on the positive, guys. Aljo earned his right for that title shot. There's no question about that. He beat some of the best of the best, and I'm going to go with that. I'm happy that he's the champion, and let's just move on, and hopefully everything sorts itself out.
All right, Coach. Thanks for the time. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Take it easy.
See ya.
Bye.
There he goes. One of the best in the biz, Coach Ray Longo. Been in the corner of Matt Serra and Chris Weidman when they won their titles. Man, definitely. What he's talking about, he's got other killers like Al Iaquinta and Merab Dvalishvili. Good. Did you see Dvalishvili on one of the embedded standing on a ladder, but on the actual rail of the ladder? He was hammering something in at Aljo's house. And I was like, oh, man, give the guy a flat service, or can someone spot the guy? He's nutty, man.
Yeah, I get dizzy just putting up a poster on my wall or something like that. I can't imagine some of these guys that go up on them big ladders, or even those guys that hang off here in Vegas, the hotels, and clean the windows. Get out of here, man.
I want people to actually know what I'm talking about. He, see this chair right here? He was standing on this, like on the balls of his feet, as he was putting something up. Not like a flat surface. Do I have a flat surface? No. Like, you would think he'd stand on this part. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He's got plenty of real estate there for his 2 feet. Instead, he was standing on this part. I don't know if people caught that on embedded, but yeah, like, that's some serious balance, honestly. That was more impressive than Daniel LaRusso on the boat. Actually, that wasn't that impressive. He got knocked off right away.
I thought that was pretty impressive. Dude, I don't think I could do that with the way the boats, with the way the lake moves and all that. I could try that all day. I don't think I can barely walk on the curb.
But he had, well, maybe, but his feet straddled the boat, and he had, his legs were split, and the fall is just water. You know, granted, the fall here is just carpet, but I had a buddy who stood on a chair and broke his leg because all he did was stand on a chair to take a picture of a group. This is in corporate America, and they go, hey, Benny, will you take it? He goes, sure. He stood on one of those folding chairs, and as he stood on it, the chair kind of gave out and flipped. And as he fell, his leg just snapped because he got caught right in the chair.
Didn't it go in between the armrest and the chair, like here? You know, like,
yeah.
It went in there, right?
And he
went, oh, God.
Yeah. So maybe that one will just always stay in my head. When I was seeing that, and Aljo was kind of giggling, pointing and giggling. But anyway, let's get talking to some fights. Eric Nixick will also join us as well, the other part of Aljamain Sterling's corner. And let's talk a little bit about the main event. We had Jan Blachowicz defending his title against Israel Adesanya. Goes, I thought Israel Adesanya was up 2-1 going into rounds 4 and 5. I also thought he did well at the beginning of rounds 4 and 5 before getting taken down. And then I completely agree with the scores of Jan Blachowicz winning those rounds and then taking a decision. I thought they were going to announce 48-47. I wasn't expecting 4 rounds to 1, but I wasn't as upset either, because in my mind I was processing, as I was giving the 10-9s, I was thinking definitive 10-9, maybe a 10-9, you know, and I felt like there was one of those that could go Blachowicz's way. I didn't think I saw two of them, so that's why I was a little surprised with 49-46, and then there was a 49-45. That means Blachowicz is getting all the benefits, including the dominant work on the ground. Was that enough for 10-8? I suppose. One of the rounds he closed pretty strong, but I think that was a little too liberal. And I know that since 2017, they wanted him to be a little bit more liberal with the 10-8, because I just finished saying definitive. Maybe. And I think that's what they wanted to clarify, was a little bit more of what's a definitive 10-9 and what's a maybe a 10-9. We definitely don't want 10-10s, and there is no half-point system. So they've been going a little bit more to the 10-8, but then there's probably a maybe a 10-8, 10-9 as well. You could always just say don't leave it in the hands of the judges, but that just doesn't happen, folks. That's not the reality of it, especially at high level here, championship fight. Anyway, the right guy got his hand raised. You know, congrats to Jan Blachowicz, who definitely deserves more respect in this game.
You know, it's so crazy because I want to talk about Jan Blachowicz and what he did. I'm one of those guys that said, hey, man, he's the bigger guy. He should win this fight, right? He has more to defend here. But really, I do want to give him his props, and I thought he had a great game plan. But I also want to give Israel Adesanya his props in A, the fact that he even challenged himself to go do something like this is very admirable. There are a lot of top-level, high-level athletes in all sports that are just too comfortable where they're at, and they don't do this, these types of things. And this is why at the end of the day, when you're trying to figure out who the greatest quarterback of all time, all that stuff, you really have to nitpick, and it's little things like this, right? But I want to give him props in the fact that the way he conducted himself afterwards. If I had a son or a daughter, I would definitely point to a guy like Israel Adesanya as a role model. Listen to the way this guy's talking at one of the worst moments of his life right now. Listen to the things that he's keeping real. What motivates him? I was very proud of our sport. I was very proud of him and his performance that night.
He went for it. He dared to be great. And if it hits, that launches him into another stratosphere of superstardom. If it doesn't, he's still the UFC middleweight champ. He's only got one loss, you know, and he competed that night. It's not like he went up there and got walloped, where now we pull him aside and go, don't ever do that again. Don't you dare battle those 205ers. He gave Blachowicz fits at times, you know what I mean? But Blachowicz made the right adjustments, and that was that. He wins. Let me just say something about the other title fight, because our next guest is locked and loaded and ready to go. Amanda Nunes, she made quick work of Megan Anderson. Props to her. I mean, I don't even think she got touched, honestly. She hits so hard. She knows how to go for the finish. She's so comfortable in there. Just head and shoulders above anybody else. Congratulations to her, seriously. And she's able to manage both divisions at the same time, which is rare. It's something I'm against, but that featherweight division isn't too deep, so they don't come caught. They don't come hollering too often, and then she's kind of cleaned out the other one. So she's going to be one of the few that can actually maintain that activity. All right, so we're going to reset here, and we're going to get our next guest on, Eric Nixick, also in the corner of Aljamain Sterling this past Saturday night when he became the UFC's bantamweight champion by defeating Peter Yan via disqualification. What up, Big E? How you doing?
Good, man. How are you guys?
Good. You know, I'm going to stick with what I would tell any coach that wins the title. Congrats. Congrats to you, the whole team. Of course, your guy, Aljamain Sterling. Sometimes the fights just go this way. There was a disqualification, but I thought it was the right call. So congratulations to you, to Team Sterling, and hopefully you guys are happy, you know, with this title. I know it's a different way to win the title. I know Aljamain put the belt, you know, down on the ground. I know he actually wound up going to the hospital. You probably had a lot to process, but still, you know, it still holds. Congrats.
I appreciate it, bro. Thank you.
Tell us now, like, what do you feel after 36 hours? We just talked to Ray Longo a few minutes ago. He says he hasn't even been able to sleep. He's happy for his guy. He loved working with you, you know, but at the same time, he understands that nothing, I guess, is really going to be 100% like he would want for his guy until they eventually run it back someday. But how about you? How have you processed all this?
Yeah, pretty much the same, I would say. You know, it was an invaluable experience, definitely, you know, being able to work with Aljo and go through a championship camp, and then I think just, you know, understanding what it takes to fight a guy like Peter Yan, you know, that's information that I think that we'll be able to take with us onto the next fight. And to be quite truthful, you know, I think one of the blessings about this sport and it being pretty busy, especially here at Ashink Couture, is, you know, my focus gets to kind of shift over to Dan Ige and Francis for the guys in March, you know. So I try to take the 2 days, the rest of Saturday and all of Sunday to kind of reflect on things. And then, you know, like John Anik says, like turn the page and you got to move on to the next. So, you know, the experience was great, but now I got to refocus for the other two guys for March.
Have you been in contact with Aljo? What have you kind of communicated with him in this last day and a half?
You know, yeah, I spent the whole night, but we were at the hospital. And then I actually drove him home. So we got some time to just kind of sit and chat, but you know, these things are out of his control. Unfortunately, right? Like he didn't want it to end that way either. And I'm certain he didn't want all the backlash for being the victim of an illegal blow. So he didn't do anything wrong. You know, so just kind of just looking at the positives, I think, and then we kind of rehashed the fight on the way there. He didn't really remember too much on the way in the hospital or in the ambulance. And then on the way home, I feel like he remembered some of the stuff, and then we kind of went over some of the fight and then some of the details of the fight. And then, you know, I got him home, and then he had a bunch of family and friends in town. So, you know, I dropped everything off, said hello, and then, you know, I wanted to go home and see my family as well. And then I talked to him again yesterday and just asked how he was feeling. And he said he was feeling better today and he was showing some of his family around town. So.
And that night when the knee happened, what can you take us through that process of when, first of all, let's start with he's in the grounded position and Jan's got a hold of his head. And at that point, you probably aren't thinking that he's going to knee him, but were you shouting, you know, what you wanted him to do as far as a defense or, you know, the choke itself, or you probably knew that Aljo wasn't in any trouble there. So what were you already forecasting as the next moves? And then what were you thinking when the knee actually hit? And then obviously, you know, everything else played out.
You know, I would imagine that from my standpoint, I just wanted him to clear the hands. And then I expected Jan to probably throw something like a rear elbow or something coming up. But when I looked at the whole fight, I kind of understood Jan was probably expecting a reshot out of Aljo once he elevated and got off his feet, maybe a reshot. And that's probably why he attempted that knee there, but just lost track of where Aljo was, you know, and it landed. And I mean, I don't think Jan was like this malicious, like I'm going to hurt this guy in the wrong way. You know, unfortunately, he just threw the strike at the wrong position. And, you know, I heard Mark Smith say he's grounded. And then right as he said it, he threw the knee. And I was like, I almost thought like the guy was joking. I'm like, dude, what the hell was that? Like, you know, and then my immediate reaction was like, hey, that's a DQ, or let's get a point. Let's get this figured out. And then it just kind of started to drag on from that point on, you know.
You know, that whole – the Apex is not the biggest place in the world. After this fight, did you run into anybody from their camp or any and have an opportunity to just go, what happened? What were you guys thinking? Sure.
Well, I talked to Paropa last night from ATT. You know, I think the world of that guy and that team. We're always like, I know we're friends on the road. We're friendly, but I just respect him as a coach. So we actually reached out to one another and just kind of rehashed everything and just said, hey, man, I know that wasn't the intentions and vice versa. You know, he didn't really elaborate. Only thing he elaborated on was like, I was saying punch him. He goes, I don't know what anybody else said. And I actually seen the video of coach saying, you know, hey, just punch. So somebody in that corner apparently said, you know, throw a kick or throw a knee. And, you know, that I think that's the risk you run sometimes when you have guys in your corner that might not be experienced or understand what their role is. You know, if Parupa was the head coach in that corner, which I don't know if he was or wasn't, but if he's wearing the mic, it should be he's the only one talking. Because he was actually saying the right shit. The other guy wasn't. And that's kind of why you don't put people in your corner that are shouting over your head coach.
Did Jan surprise you guys in any way? Was there anything that he brought to the table that night that, I don't want to say caught you off guard, but maybe something that surprised you?
No, I think I've worked with Jan in the past. I know how good he is. You know, the first time I worked with him, I remember thinking to myself, this kid's going to be in that title contention or a champion sooner rather than later. So I think a lot of the things that I saw from him, I wasn't too surprised on. But I will say this, like his takedown defense was on point. But also Aljo's entries weren't that great either in that fight. So, but I mean, to defend 16 out of 17 takedowns is pretty freaking impressive. I don't care who you are. So that definitely that. And you know, and his cardio hung with him. I thought he did a really good job. I know Aljo put the pace on him in round one, and I think that kind of like that championship experience out of him really showed. He understood how to pace himself for a 5-round fight, and I think that's a big learning curve for anybody, you know, getting into that 5-rounder and how do you pace yourself, you know. So that's something I thought he did really well as well.
Man, you're a coach, you're a father, you're a friend. When you look at Extreme Couture, it's gotten pretty young, right? Like some of these guys like Dan Ige, Puna Soriano, Aljamain Sterling, even Francis Ngannou, they haven't gone through some of the things that some of these other vets that we remember from Extreme Couture have gone through. When you put your hand on Aljamain Sterling's shoulder and you give him that advice, whether it comes coach-wise, father figure-wise, what is that one thing that you really want to drive home for the next week for that guy? Because he's getting a lot of hate on social media. Ray Longo says he's getting threatened. This is a different feel at the end of this fight. What's that one point you want to drive home with Aljamain?
You know, it's hard, and I feel like once this kind of news cycle switches, and that's the nice thing about with the UFC, they're always having shows. It's like the next story is going to be up, and, you know, a lot of people are – I mean, they're not going to forget about it once the rematch comes. That'll be all rehashed again. But, like, the way the news cycles keep shifting, you know, you're going to get a couple days of that stuff, and then it'll die and taper down. The unfortunate thing is, you know, it's from people that really don't walk the walk. You know, they don't really understand – what leads up to that, the process to get there, and then really the process after too. You know, we're only predicated really to seeing the 15 or 25 minutes in the cage, and then that's it. You know, there's a lot more that goes into these people's lives, and I don't think it's fair to be critical of them for something really Aljo didn't have any control over. He didn't do right. So we're looking at things right now, and even when people were talking about, well, the belt shouldn't transfer hands. Well, what's going to keep a champion from not throwing illegal strikes then if the belt's not going to transfer hands? There's so many variables that come into play when you hear some of these criticisms for the kid, and he did absolutely nothing wrong. You know, he was the victim of an illegal blow, and it is what it is. That's not how he wanted to win. That's not how Jan wanted to lose. But that's the rules, and that's the way we have to play it.
Who said it shouldn't transfer hands? Like, is that something like fans are saying or somebody in the know?
I've seen very good reporters – like I read some of their tweets, was like, well, in this instance, I don't think it should transfer hands. And I'm like,
so this is WWE. That wasn't a schmoz where you just send in a bunch of people, you get the disqualification, and then the champ walks off with the title. I mean, you know, this is a proper sport.
And these are smart journalists that I followed for a long time. And I'm like, not transfer hands. Like, so what's going to keep a champion from not wanting to throw an illegal strike? If he's up, and let you know, everybody's making, like, well, he was up. Well, what if he was up but broke his hand at the end of the round and knew he couldn't finish the fight, right? There's so many variables that come into play that we can sit here and look at. And at the end of the day, that the rules are set for a reason. And you know, that's the punishment for it.
Yeah, it was the way it was handled. I was very fine with that. In fact, I didn't even think the doctor needed to be brought in. I just thought, as long as Mark had already ruled he was grounded and that it was intentional, the fight was over. I didn't want to see that guy go back in there, even if he did say, nah, I'm going to tough it out. You know, I didn't want to see a Rocky moment. You could tell he was rocked. I'm sure, I guess I should ask you, is that how you felt too?
Yeah, I think you take a lot of onus off of the kid if you just make a swift judgment on the situation. You know, it was obvious. I heard Mark say that he's grounded, throws the knee, it's an illegal strike, to the head. It sounded like a guy hitting a cantaloupe. The kid drops. You can say whatever you think about how he reacted. That's none of our business. It was an illegal strike to his head, and it should have been a DQ on the spot. You know, now the way I look at the situation, you know, I think Mark Smith and the commission wanted to make the right call. But like, just like in football, if you think it's a fumble, call it a fumble on the field and go back and review it. You know, call it a DQ, go back and review it. And if it is what you think it is, then the fight's over. It's a DQ. But that's going to alleviate a lot of this backlash that Aljamain gets in trying to make this kid decide to fight. The second point to that is, you know, although Ray Longo's the head coach in the corner, I looked over at Ray and I said, Coach, I don't think we let this guy continue, even if they somehow take a point or 2 points away from Jan. I wasn't sure Aljo should continue from that point on either, and Ray agreed. So I think at whatever they were deciding on, I think as us as a corner was probably going to pull that fight too, just because we didn't want our center guy back out there if he was like that.
Yeah. And I guess to be fair to Mark, maybe they actually have their process, their steps, and maybe that's all he was doing. But I'm glad that in the end he got it right. This may have been his first UFC title fight. Goz and I were asking ourselves that question as it was on playing, because we've seen this guy ref all the way from Tough Enough now into the big leagues. We're very happy for him, you know what I mean? And that was probably a tough situation, but in the end he got it right. With Peter Yan, you know, I want to say this. I still wasn't sure he was the truth. He's good, and I can't wait for the rematch. They got some really good bantamweights out there, but I wasn't sure that fighting Faber and Aldo had told us yet exactly just how good Peter Yan was. But, man, he really, really impressed me that night. I certainly didn't think the fight was over. I thought Aljo was doing some things that were costing him, because that activity was nice, and he was able to win a round on each judge's scorecard. But you could tell it was also affecting him, his cardio. So how he'll be able to balance the two, that's up to you guys to figure it out. But, you know, it was – I don't know. It's pretty fascinating fight the way it was unfolding. A lot of surprises. But I will say this, Peter Yan, regardless of what his coaches were telling him, and regardless of Russian and English or whatever, that was a Chris Webber play. I don't know if you guys remember in the 90s when Chris Webber called the timeout, and regardless of the fans or the coaches, he made the mistake. Peter Yan made the mistake. The guy's knee was down. He shouldn't have thrown it. And lastly, to you cunts out there, I swear, I only reserve that word for special people. But anybody that thinks this kid was acting, stop it already, man. Like, a few weeks ago, Corey Sandhagen delivered a vicious knee to Frankie Edgar. And we all went, whoa, that's highlight of the year. And Sandhagen asked Edgar if he was all right. And Edgar was stood there and took it like a man, you know. Like, why can that mess someone up, but this knee not mess someone up? You know, like, I don't know. That part bothered me a little bit. He was rocked. You know, he was rocked. Did you lose your parlay and you're pissed? All right, I get it. I've said Peter Yan was up 2-1 and probably going to win the fourth if it continued the same way I said that. You know, are you a Peter Yan fan or whatever, and you're upset? Sure. But there's a way to be upset, and then you exit the stadium, and then – you start the smack talk the next time or whatever. But at that particular moment, I mean, come on, man. That means you're watching frauds out there. I don't believe we're watching frauds out there. We're watching human beings play high-speed human chess, man. It's a thing of beauty. That's just the way this fight played out. I mean, Derek, you said it himself. You guys didn't go through the whole ruse of going to a hospital for no reason, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I've been in those rides before, and if he was acting, he was doing a pretty good job with me too, because, you know, I'd explain what was going on in the rounds and everything. I was just kind of get him caught up. It wasn't like he was doesn't remember anything at all. But you know, and that was part of the protocol from the paramedic. You know, before he gave him some meds, so he was trying to understand where he was at mentally. And you know, it took a while for him to kind of come to and understand where we were at and the gravity of things are going on. So it wasn't like he was, you know, melted in his chair or anything like that. But at the same time, I think in any fight, a lot of times, either knocked out or not, it's hard to remember stuff. So, you know, just running over things with him.
Your gym has won UFC titles. You've been in corners where you've won titles. You've won, so on the regional scene, you've won major titles. Was this the first time that you were in a corner when a UFC title was won by your athlete?
Yeah, that was the first one that we won. So, you know, and it's just tough to celebrate it that way, but it does feel good, mainly because, you know, although I was a very, very small part of Aljo's career, this is like a sliver in his career. But understanding who and what Aljamain Sterling is and what he represents, it was very nice to be a part of, especially just being able to see the way a champion actually works. You know, there's a lot of things I think that people overlook in Aljamain Sterling. And for me as a coach are the things that like drew me to him. You know, he's a very much a teammate. He's a very good kid. All the people that he brought out with him are all fighters of from his training camp. You know, there wasn't a day that if he was taken off, he was still here helping them. For me, as a guy that runs a gym, a facility, you know, his last spar day, he gets done sparring and him and Marab are mopping my mats, cleaning up, taking care of their area, their space, you know, and I kind of chuckled. I had the video of it, man. I was like, dude, this guy's 1 week out from a title fight and he's taking care of the, of a gym that's kind of adopted him. You know, this is not as technically his home, but he just does all the right things in the intangibles and his character. And he's just a good kid to work with, man. So, you know, I'm happy for him. Although we, you know, it is a title in a sense, but you know, now I'm just kind of geared up for March 27th and Dan Ige next weekend.
Yeah. Look, we're running out of time here, but so that's done. And congrats, you know, again on the win. And with Dan Ige, it's been fun watching that guy rise through the ranks and become one of the top 45ers in the world. Any quick thoughts on his fight and Francis a few weeks later?
Yeah, Dan's got a good opponent, man. Gavin Tucker out of Canada, great kid. Actually worked with him a few times. He was hoping to come out and train with us, and then for the Cub fight, and then he ends up fighting Dan. So that's how the MMA game works. But you know, this kid's ultra competitive. He's really good. I think it's going to be a super fun fight. And then you know, heavyweight title fight. Stipe Miocic is the baddest man on the planet. You know, and I think he's made incredible strides since the last time he fought Francis. So I think both guys are kind of on that collision course, and you know, I'm looking forward to see Francis compete against the best in the world and then see what we have after that.
Awesome. Well, I'm sure we'll have more time to talk about that fight. Focus on Saturday. And again, congrats on this past Saturday. Again, you handled yourself like a true gentleman. Goes already said coach, father, husband, all that stuff. You're a gentleman-y. You do things the right way. So we always secretly root for you.
I appreciate it, guys, man. You know how much I love you guys.
Love you too, man. Take care.
I'll see you. Better, guys. Thank you.
That is Big E, Eric Nixick, the Vanilla Gorilla, the 2020 MMA Junkie Co-Coach of the Year. Great, great guy. What a tough spot to be in, you know. Like, that was his first title, because being part of a coaching staff, because Ray Long was the head coach, he said it. But he was part of a coaching staff where the UFC title was won by an athlete. And he, you know, he came up short in the Jessica Eye fight. I know he was in the corner of the Benavidez fight, but this was the first time where they won the title. And it's not how they would have wanted to win the title, but it was a legal way of winning the title.
Yeah, there are a lot of coaches that you look at their relationship with their fighter and you can just tell it's not a bad one, but you can tell a handshake was given, a contract was signed, and they do their thing. But two guys that we had on today, Eric Nixick and Ray Longo, their relationships with their fighters are a bit different. They really, really take things to heart. They really have their fighters' best interests. They don't just turn the page and go to the next guy. Like, it really affects them. And those are two really good people in the sport.
No doubt. Look, we have just a couple more minutes. Islam Makhachev, can you say enough about that guy? Yeah, he hasn't fought much in the last 4 years. I think four times since 2017 for a variety of reasons, you know, injuries and COVID and personal COVID and COVID itself that slowed down the sport in 2020, opponents having withdrawals. But, man, Drew Dober's been on a nice little tear. I think we won 6 of 7 or something like that going into this fight, and Makhachev just sliced and diced right through him.
That's the thing, is like, Drew Dober is a great fighter. He's getting ready to make that push to become the next level there, but Makhachev was just all over him, just one step ahead of everything he did. That's got to be demoralizing, because if you're Drew Dober, you go back and you go, I thought I was ready to take that next step, and now I have to sit with the fact that that guy was that much better than me. I don't even know how you begin to turn things around at that point.
Makhachev threw some hands, but for the most part, he knew that his strength was getting Drew Dober off his feet and not letting that big left connect. But the way he did it, he had these creative inside trips. You know, he would lock up, first of all, and then he found different ways each time to get Drew Dober. On the last one, I think Drew Dober partially just said, I'm pulling guard. You know, I think even DC was noting that he was going to get taken down regardless, you know, belly to belly style, inside trip. I mean, he's really, really creative, Islam Makhachev. And then he's so efficient with his strikes. I underestimated him and Peter Yan. I came away very, very impressed by both guys. I gave my excuse. Well, with Makhachev, I just hadn't seen him as much, and I hadn't seen him as much against the top guys. You know, I think he's now on an 8-fight win streak. And look, Dober's not top five, but he's ranked. You know, he's ranked in our USA Today Sports MMA Junkie rankings. But he's towards the bottom of the 15, the honorable mention area. But still, you know, like I said, it was a guy that was been doing very well as a lightweight, and he made it look easy. I'm now anxious to see what else he's got. At first, when I heard Tony Ferguson, I thought, well, Tony's lost two in a row, but he's still a G. I get it. But then I was like, how am I not putting two and two together? He wants to continue what should have happened between Khabib and Tony, I believe. That's what he wants to do, is just kind of like take the baton from his guy and relive that. You know, Khabib was in his corner, and I'm sure Khabib would be in the corner for this one. So I thought that was an interesting twist. I'm not sure why. Maybe it was because it was a long day of fights, but I wasn't sure why I didn't capture that at first.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying.
Alexander Rakic versus Thiago Santos. I had hyped that one up. I thought it was going to deliver a lot more violence. I thought it was going to be like Santos and Manuel. I didn't know who was going to win. I picked Santos on Stat Picks. I had no problem with those that were picking Rakic. But that fight wasn't what I expected. It was pretty boring, to be honest. I thought the guys on the broadcast summed it up best. What do you, you know, you hope to be a contender. You don't just hope to beat a contender. You want to be a contender. And you got to whet the appetite of the fan. You got, the fan has to want to watch you fight in a title fight. The promoter has to be able to sell you fighting in a title fight. And this is the part that a lot of fighters don't want to hear. But that fight, we weren't walking away going, woo, did you see that? We just didn't. And what sucked even worse, it was on the same night that the champion was performing. Think about if Rakic had annihilated Santos, or if Santos had won the fight and annihilated Rakic. What do you not think that Jan Blachowicz or Israel, had he won, was going to get those names put in front of him? You know what I mean? And yet I think Jan was asked something about Rakic, and he just either didn't understand it or misunderstood or something, and like that was it. It was just swept under the rug. Big miss by Alexander Rakic. I think he could have really, really made a statement here, and it just, like I say, they were too hesitant at times.
I can agree with the end product. It probably wasn't as exciting as a lot of us thought, but I actually enjoyed that fight a little bit more than most people, just because both guys, when they did throw, were throwing with pretty bad intentions. Even shots that were being blocked, I was like, God, forearms are going to break here. So I think they tried. Maybe they could have taken a little bit more chances, but I understand. I mean, at that level and how hard them guys are throwing, I could see if they took their foot off the gas a little bit. But like you said, that's going to come back to haunt you.
Yeah. Case in point, Blachowicz. Do you remember when Reyes and Jones fought in February of last year? All everyone wanted to talk about was the rematch. When are Reyes and Jones going to run it back? I think a week or two later, Jones, who doesn't go to too many fights that aren't in Vegas, goes to the fights in Albuquerque, because that's where he lives, or Santa Fe, or wherever the hell they had them. But they were there in New Mexico, and Blachowicz knocked out Corey Anderson. Remember, Corey Anderson, I think, was ahead in the pecking order. You know, one could argue that may have been his night. Like, he was supposed to shine. And then Blachowicz knocks him out. Blachowicz tells Jones, let's you and I go. Jones gets excited and starts to talk about Blachowicz even more than Dominic Reyes. And then, of course, he had his little, months later, you know, he had the little problem with negotiations, chose to become a heavyweight or whatever. But that's how quick goes. Things can turn. You know what I mean? All it takes is something like that, and you are now the thing that the champion is the most obsessed with. He wants to fight you. He feels like maybe he can make more money with you. The promotion gets excited about it. You know, I don't know. That's what I mean, folks, when it comes to these types of fights that have big, big spotlights in front of them. Real quick, Dominic Cruz, congrats. He eked out a tough win over Casey Kenney, shows he still has gas left in the tank. Kyler Phillips looked great. That bantamweight division had a lot going on, including these two fights and the title fight we discussed earlier. Another veteran of the WEC came up a little short. Askar Askarov defeated Joseph Benavidez in that flyweight division. It was a catch fight technically because Askarov came in a pound heavy. Kai Carl France defeated Rogerio Bontarin. Bontarin goes was dominating him. He had the body triangle. He was just, you know, he was attacking the neck. I mean, he was choking him. And credit to Kai Carl France for his defense, for staying calm and staying ready and being able to, you know, thwart that and come back and KO him, which I'm still confused about. Was it walk-off? Did Herb wave it off or not? And because he wanted to come back in, but then Herb said, no, the fight's over. It looked like one of the more subtle waves, waving off of a fight from Herb. Maybe there was confusion with the walk-off and then the reaction to the fighter not being able to, you know, get up and show Herb that he would have been able to continue fighting anyway. But do you remember that sequence?
Yeah, I think the walk-off was a little bit too premature, to be honest. I wouldn't have taken that chance. But you just can't count anybody out. I mean, that he was, I don't want to say he was being dominated, but he was being handled up until that moment. So for him to come back and win that fight, that's huge. But the walk-off was, you do that 10 times, it's going to burn you about 7 at least, I think. I think he was very lucky that, because I don't even remember Herb waving his hands off like to end the fight. I think he was even confused with it.
Let's end with this because we're already over. Any final thoughts on social media? John Jones, he's like, okay, don't bring up Adesanya to me anymore. Giving Izzy a hard time because of that loss. TJ Dillashaw, of course, telling Peter Young, you're a cheater now too. And then he says, best actor goes to Aljamain Sterling. Triple C gets involved. Peter Young says, my bad, my mistake. And now he's upping up the trash talk. Is part of you like, I like it. They're building up for big fights. Or would you like them to cool it or choose their spots somewhere in the middle? How do you feel about all that?
Triple C's kind of cracked me up because he's top dog, right? So I think he has every right to say what he wants. Sometimes he does go a little too far. He's cringy, but I get it. John Jones always confuses me because here's the thing. You could say whatever you want. I agree with his position. You know, don't bring up that name to me. I get that. But then don't turn around and fight him. Like, don't get us to want to watch that fight a year from now if you're going to say we have no reason to watch it, right? So I think if he's going to say that, he needs to be prepared to not push that fight a year from now because he's already telling us there's no reason to have it. So that kind of confuses me a little bit. I think he probably could have said something a little different and maybe kept that alive a little bit more. And then TJ Dillashaw, I don't understand that one bit. I think he's got to stay. I get that he wants a big fight and all that, but he can only go so far, man, before people throw this back in his face.
It does seem that way a little bit with John Jones. Like, he's having a party and he calls the cops on his own party, you know, at times. You know, hey, this thing could be a rager, man. All the chicks are showing up. There's the bar's full. We're having a good time. And then there's always, you know, that little screech to the music and hold on, is that the cops here or what is something happening? You know what I mean? Like, it's never like this enjoyable festive ride with John. Like, he might be dousing a little bit, you know. I don't know, maybe the trash talk will lead to more buys, but he could be dousing the possibility of a super fight. And more than anything, and I know these fighters think they're going to win them all, but if he gets crushed in a few months, Izzy can almost run back the same smack to him. You know, he tried to go up and got slapped or whatever, whatever it is that they say. But I knew he was going to do it. They hate each other. That's what will lead for it to be a big fight someday. And with TJ, yeah, TJ, just get back to fighting. You know, we're all gonna forgive. You paid your dues, your penance, your for your crime or whatever. Just get back and fight and beat TJ. I never knew him to be like a jerk off or whatever. He always seemed to be a pretty decent fella, but all I can think of is either that or he's just gone full heel. And, you know,
I think so.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? Yeah, man, I'm telling you, this sport is wacky. There are some characters in it. You can never be surprised, that's for sure. Folks, thanks for spending the last hour with us here on MMA Junkie Radio on Sportscaster. We do this every Monday and Thursday here on this channel, sportscaster.com/MMA Junkie. This is where you can watch all the shows that we've done in the past with a lot of great guests, including the two we had today, who we want to thank for their time, Ray Longo and Eric Bixick, two of the best coaches in the sport. They were in the corner of Aljamain Sterling this past weekend when Aljamain Sterling won the UFC bantamweight title over Petr Yan by disqualification. Congrats again to Amanda Nunes. I'm sorry we didn't talk enough about her. She is great. There really wasn't much to talk about because the fight ended rather quickly. And frankly, she's just the GOAT, man. 14 in a row now, I think. Only one loss in the UFC, only four losses in her career. What she's done is amazing. Now defended the featherweight title two times to go with the five at Bantam. It's amazing. Simply amazing. Seven title defenses there. And the names, too, literally clean the cupboards. And then, of course, Jan Blachowicz, he wants his respect. It's about time we start giving it to him. He's on an incredible run, 38 years old, and he's still out there performing. How about those adjustments? You know, the Polish power wasn't coming through, so he went to some takedowns and some ground and pound, and he protected what was his. Anyway, all right, folks, we're going to get on out of here, like I said, and we'll see you all on Thursday with another edition of MMA Junkie Radio. Take care of yourselves. Go out there and be a champion.